This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. I am the godfather, Nate Milton, joined by big, nasty Alfred Cunningham. No Marcus this week, brother.
It's okay. You know what we do. It's Cracking Tales Week, and it's good to be on the show. We're just going with a two-man crew, and we'll hold it down for Marcus.
Yes, and we do have a wonderful cracky tale later on, and all I'm going to say is karma is a bitch, Jim Irsay. That's all I'm going to say about it. But let's get to the big story, kind of what has been preoccupying everybody for the last week, and that is the world of college basketball, in particular the NCAA tournament. And March once again is mad, Brother Cunnell, and Warren Buffett gets to put that $1 million back in his change purse because nobody's going to have a perfect bracket this year. We saw a lot of bracket busters. Stephen F. Austin beat VCU. Mercer, of course, upset Duke. What have been kind of your takeaways from the first couple days of the tournament?
Well, and first of all, isn't that amazing that there's already no perfect brackets? And really, there haven't been too many monumental upsets. You can consider Duke bellying up an upset, obviously. But, you know, looking at that game, I was actually waffling and taking Mercer. And Duke has done this. It seems every other year they lose to a team that it seems they should beat, whether it's VCU or now Mercer. But, you know, already there's everybody's out of the $1 billion race. But what's really stood out to me are not only ugly games, but ugly games that have created great drama. I've had so much fun watching these first round games from teams just giving games away, just blowing it. VCU had victory in the palm of their hands, and there was an egregious foul that kept Stephen F. Austin in that game. And then we saw the UConn game where UConn grabbed victory at the jaws of defeat. So just a really brilliant week. Not necessarily good technical basketball. It still looked like amateur college basketball, but it created such great drama. And yeah, you know, even spilled over to today where there's only one game where that was over 70 points with Michigan, I believe, at this point. But still, just very, very good drama. And I think one of the better first days of college basketball I've ever witnessed.
Yeah, not a lot of technical acuity being shown on the floor, if you will. But like you said, a lot of drama. And that's what you want on the first weekend. And it's, to me, the first weekend of the NCAA tournament is kind of like Christmas because – you get, I love the way they do it now with TBS and TNT and Court TV or True TV. True TV. And they do all the games going back and forth between the channels. And you know, every 30 minutes you're going to get that studio show with Charles Barkley and EJ and those guys. And it's just a lot of fun to kind of digest everything, you know, before we get, you know, into the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight when the, you know, when the cream sort of rises to the top.
Absolutely. And it's great that Charles Barkley and that crew, I think that's probably the biggest gain and the biggest coup for college basketball when they made this deal and they split up between CBS and TNT is now we get that elite, I think, second to none crew of Ernie and Chuck and Kenny, and they're just all so good. And nobody is better, I think, at just talking about sports as if they're just hanging out. And it's still professional, and I love the coverage that they give. So, you know, that's also a really big highlight for college basketball. And really, I see more upsets happening. I really do. I try to stay chalky with my bracket. I'm tired of just picking underdogs to let me down. And I did have some 12-5 upsets in there. But I'm a little nervous based on how some of the top seeds are playing that there may be some more upsets on the way.
Yeah, you talk about the round of 32. I think there's a lot of interesting matchups. Probably the game I'm most interested in because of where I live is Virginia and Memphis. But then outside of that, I think, you know, you talk about Wichita State and Kentucky. That is going to be an interesting matchup. And I think it's unfair that Wichita State had to face a team like Kentucky this early on. But, you know, if they, what Ric Flair say, to beat a man, you got to be the man. So you got to beat the man. So they, you know, they would have had to run through a team like this eventually. So that to me are kind of the two interesting matchups that are going to go down in the round of 32.
Yeah, and I have Wichita State going to a Final Four. I know they have a murderous row, but they're a good team, even though they do have a bad schedule. Yeah, sure, that is something that you should, you know, keep in the back of your mind and take into consideration. But this is a Wichita State team that went deep into last year's tournament. They are a very, very good team. They're a confident team. And it's just a good team with a bad schedule, and that's okay. They're used to success. There's not too much pressure. They know what they need to do. And I really do think – I don't think this – murderous row is going to affect them in terms of advancing this tournament. I think they're much better than Kentucky, who, yes, they have Andrew Wiggins and they're turning him loose lately and he's been playing good basketball, but I don't think that Kentucky has enough firepower to beat that Wichita State team.
I don't think so either. And it's kind of the interesting juxtaposition between the one and dones and then the smaller schools that have, you know, more senior leadership. And right. I think that's kind of an interesting thing to look at, especially when you got Adam Silver talking about the NBA may have to go back and take a look at, you know, the admission policy. So I just think, you know, we really have not, other than what, maybe 1 year seen, or 2 years maybe, seen this kind of, we're just going to get these blue chip McDonald's All-Americans for 1 year and then they can bolt to the NBA. We really haven't seen that come to fruition, but, you know, maybe a handful of times.
Right. No, that's a great point. And I just can't understand for the life of me why the NBA would do this. And yes, the college experience is something that's very valuable, and they do get coached up. And coming out of college from an elite program where maybe you'll get coached by Coach K or Coach Cal, you're going to have a little bit of a better foundation. But, I mean, it's still the adage that if you're old enough to fight in this country and fight a war and die for your country, you should absolutely be able to go from high school to the pros.
Yeah, no, nobody has a problem when it's some nice, young, pretty girl playing tennis.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, Pookie and Nuck Nuck want to go to the league. And it's a national conversation.
Absolutely. When you talk about the seniors, and that's a great point that you brought up, Nate, because that's just one thing that especially I look at, in that a great juxtaposition between these freshman superstars at Duke, and then you see Mercer. They're a team that look like they've been there, and they have senior leadership, and that was just too much for Duke to handle. You could tell. Duke was just taking way too many threes, and they were settling, and that was kind of part of their youth, trying to make up a 5-point deficit in one possession. And that's the type of, when you talk about the upcoming games with the senior-led team, that's going to give them the edge.
And the other thing you see, like we saw in that Duke game, when you have a team of young guys, freshmen in particular, when you get into those tight games in the final moments, they've had success in high school, they've had success in AAU, but, you know, on this national stage, sometimes, you know, they can freeze. And one possession in particular was when, I forget who it was, but Duke was able to steal the ball, and then the kid threw it off of one of his teammates, and they lost that possession. Yes, and then they were only down by two at that point. And that, yeah, you know, helped lead to and facilitate them losing the game. So, you know, those seniors, though, they've been through the battles. They've been through the wars, and they have, you know, that trial by fire that I don't think a lot of these younger teams have.
Absolutely. It's huge in college sports when they really haven't. You look at this stage that they're on. It's the first time they're on a stage that's anywhere close to what they're going to be at in the pros. So even high school, when Jabari Parker was highly touted, this is the first time he's going to be on a stage like this, and it showed.
So, yeah, all I got to say is it's a good thing we got Dennis on last week, because I don't think he'd take our call this week.
Like, poor Dennis.
I'm sorry, guys. I can't talk this week.
Star Wars convention, guys. Really.
But before we leave the NCAA, real quick, have you changed your choice for the eventual national champion, or who are you going with?
Oh, absolutely not. You know, I picked Florida last year. I was a year early, and I talked to my wise guys. Shout out to Brian Edwards. And this, you know, Brian Edwards still loves Florida, and I do too. And they looked very good in that first round. I just think they are so versatile. And it's not a team that's going to scare me like Virginia, to where Virginia is going to ugly it up. And if you are able to up the tempo and get ahead of Virginia, they're going to struggle. But Florida, they can run. They can play half-court defense, type playoff-style basketball. And they can do so many things, and they're so good and so big and athletic. I think Florida's going to run through this tournament.
Yeah, I like Florida. I got them in my Final Four, but I don't have them winning. The winner is going to come out of the East region, and unfortunately, they will defeat my Cavaliers. That's what I'm predicting, and I'm going to go with Michigan State. And Tom Izzo.
You got Virginia going that far?
I got Virginia going to the Sweet 16 and then losing to Michigan State.
Okay. I see. That's what I got.
Ultimately, I have them beating Florida, and then I've got Arizona beating Louisville on the other side.
Okay. Because the thing with Louisville is the narrative coming into the tournament was that they've been hosed. I thought they were going to get into their press clippings too much, which it seems they did in the first two rounds, and that St. Louis, they kept hanging around, and that their first round game was very, very sloppy. So I do expect Louisville to lose earlier than people think.
Yeah, so we got one more story in the A block, and what's that old Billy Preston song? Will it go around in circles? Will it fly high like a bird up in the sky? Well, we got a quarterback carousel going around in circles, and a former bird, that is the Philadelphia Eagles former starting quarterback Michael Vick, is now headed to Gotham City to quote-unquote compete for a position with Geno Smith up there for Rex Ryan and the New York Jets. That's one of the big quarterback moves. The other, your Oakland Raiders. Are they your Raiders, Alfred?
No, they're not. Even if they were, I wouldn't tell you.
So are they anybody's Raiders besides the old 90s rap group?
Yeah.
Ice Cube, the only one still.
They're not even those Raiders anymore.
Ice Cube's the only one holding on to that flag. But, the Raiders have acquired Matt Schaub, and that kind of paves the way for a quarterback to head to Houston, whether that be Johnny Football or Blake Bortles or any of those guys. Which move was more interesting to you, and who do you think will have more success talking about the Texans, the Raiders, or the Jets next season?
Oh, man, that is a good question because I think this is a lesser of three evils question. I don't particularly love any of the moves, but I do like Matt Schaub to Oakland because Oakland – still a grease fire, still really not a very good football team, still in a very, very tough division. But if you got a guy like Matt Schaub who's going to come in there, who needs a change of scenery, who has a chip on his shoulder, who can still play. People forget about Matt Schaub. Before the Texans became this running team of Adrian Foster, Matt Schaub was routinely putting up 4,000-yard seasons. He was a fantasy stud, and he's still capable of those kind of numbers. It just wasn't the philosophy of the Texans. And then he just got a little bit heady, and he started throwing pick sixes left and right, and you could tell it was just getting to him. And it was a self-fulfilling prophecy that imploded. Now that Matt Schaub is in Oakland, a fresh start, he's out in California, and he is going to have some weapons there on the Raiders. Their offense actually does have weapons as long as they can stay healthy. I do think that the Raiders are going to make a little bit of noise. Again, the Broncos are going to have a tougher schedule, as are the Chiefs and the Chargers, because they finished in those top three positions. So Raiders will benefit from not only an easier schedule, but a quarterback who is a veteran and who's going to be able to stabilize, hopefully, some games in that division.
Yeah, Schaub had especially down here in Virginia, I had a chance to watch him at UVA. I've always been a fan of Schaub's game, but I do think a combination between the injuries and him getting in his own head, that's what has caused the kind of decline the last three or four seasons. But I do think a change of scenery can help. And, there's nowhere to go but up in Oakland.
Yes.
As far as the New York Jets story goes, I think it's very intriguing. I think it's a no-lose situation because if Geno Smith is the quarterback that the Jets think he is, then he can only be benefited by having a guy like Mike Vick come in and push him in practice and, give him some leadership, and if he doesn't pan out, you got Mike Vick for anywhere from 7 to 10 games. And
Are you sure about that?
I would
say 3 to 5.
I'm not saying from 7 to 10 games because, I mean, you figure when did he get hurt last year? About week 5?
Oh, yeah, I want to say week 5. Five or 6.
So he's had basically almost an entire season to get right.
Yeah.
So I do think that, I don't see him starting immediately, but I do think if Geno starts off like he ended at parts of last season, you could definitely see Mike going in there. And who knows, if Mike Vick gets that number 7 from Geno, that tells me a lot about that young man's mentality.
Yeah, and you know what? Even if Vic does have a full season to recover, this is just what Vic is. He's injury prone. He's very small for somebody who plays a quarterback position, but he has so much talent that he is able to overcome some of that height differential.
Yeah, essentially, he's Allen Iverson. If Allen Iverson were
quarterback. Exactly. That's exactly what he is. The thing about New York and the Jets, if they're a shrewd organization, knowing their fan base, knowing how impatient Jets fans are and how brutal they can be, I know quarterback is very important, and you want to make sure that if Geno Smith doesn't pan out, you have an option. But that option really shouldn't be somebody who could draw a headline like Michael Vick, like a Tim Tebow, which is what they did with Mark Sanchez. It's just something that just creates this unnecessary distraction so that their young quarterback is one mistake away. Let's face it, in the second year of the NFL, you're going to make some pretty dumb mistakes, as he did in his rookie year. And when that happens, instead of them saying, all right, kid, we got your back, it's okay, go out there and do it, because we're talking about Matt Schaub and how important confidence is, these fans are just going to start chanting for Michael Vick, you know, until they go out there and see him get hurt. They're going to chant for Michael Vick every time Geno Smith makes a mistake. And that is, I think, a lot of what imploded Mark Sanchez. And that same fate could be had for Geno Smith.
Well, the thing is, you know, I've never understood the kind of train of thought where you don't want to have too much controversy. You know, they talked about it last year in D.C. with the RG3 and Kirk Cousins. It's like, if you're the guy, then, you know, you don't want to have another alpha male in there with you, but you want to have somebody that can push you and make you better. And I think Mike Vick can do that at this stage of the game. You know, we saw last year, even though he was injured, he was still able to lead that Philly team, you know, by making a smooth transition for Nick Foles and defusing the Riley Cooper incident. So I think he can be somebody that Geno can learn from and pick his brain, especially playing that style of quarterback. But if he's a guy that wilts under pressure, then he doesn't deserve the job anyway.
Right, but it's like the chicken and the egg. Is he wilting under pressure because that's just how he is? Or is Michael Vick's presence making him wilt under pressure? Like, what's coming before the other? And I think you're accelerating the process and the likelihood of that happening with Michael Vick in the fold. But, you know, I absolutely agree that Michael Vick has matured into a very good leader, because I think that's a lot of the reason why this Riley Cooper situation kind of disappeared rather quickly, because Michael Vick almost immediately came out in support of Riley Cooper, as he should have as a teammate, as popular as or as unpopular as that decision was. That's his teammate, and he knew that in order for that franchise to move forward, that's what he was going to have to do as leader of the team. So I really do like this move from a leadership standpoint. I just wish it was somebody with that character that Michael Vick has grown into, but maybe not somebody with such a name brand name like Michael Vick. Maybe Mark Brunell. He's throwing around a little bit.
Mark Brunell. Well, the other thing in New York was with Vick coming in, Mark Sanchez is on the way out. Real quick, do you see him getting picked up by anybody? Not in the starting role, of course, but as a backup?
Yes, I do. I think Mark Sanchez can still play. I think that he's always had some type of ability, and I think that it's amazing what he was able to do his first 2 years in the league, really doing something out of nothing. He's never had the tools to become an elite quarterback because he's got a defensive-minded coach, and very, very good defensive-minded coach, but a guy who doesn't really understand how to build an offense. And I think the Cleveland Browns are a suitor for Mark Sanchez to at least be a backup. I think the Texans might take a look. But Mark Sanchez is going to get a lot of looks around the league. And I guarantee you that by opening day, he's going to have a job. May not be a starting job. I don't think it will be a starting job, but he'll have a job.
Yeah, I think so, too. One last thing in the A block before we go. We talk about Vic and the Jets and moving forward. Some people that can't move forward or at least seem to be able to move forward is the good people at PETA. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and they went to Twitter today, and I don't know if you've seen this tweet yet, Big Nasty.
Not yet.
But they said, at least Michael Vick can't drown, electrocute, hang, or shoot a football the way he terrorized man's best friend. Hashtag shaking my head, hashtag Jets.
Now, did they actually, did they SMH?
Yeah, they SMH.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, and let's hear, did Marcus Vick have
of course, you know MV5 stepped up into it. He's always, am I my brother's keeper? Yes, I am. Marcus Vick, the often troubled younger brother of Mike Vick. Marcus Vick replied to PETA and said, at PETA, and you know Marcus Vick, eloquent brother.
Of course.
So he really put into words, I think, what a lot of people were saying. At PETA, y'all still on that bullshit? SMH, hashtag Peter.
I love, you know, and I don't know if this was planned by Marcus, but a very, very great choice of words. He says bullies. He's including the animals into the discussion by saying that PETA is on bullshit. So that's very, very clever. I don't know if it was intentional, but still very clever, Marcus. Very eloquent, as always.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the biggest Marcus Vick fan, but I can't believe I might have to agree with him on this one. I mean, of course, nobody's condoning what Mike Vick ran with the dogfighting ring and the way those animals were treated. But by the same token, people do things every day, and people have the right to move on with their lives and earn a living. And I have a big problem with PETA because they're not like the Humane Society, anybody like that, who has worked with Michael Vick in the past. PETA is a political organization, and they're there to promote PETA.
Yeah. That C in PETA, I would say, would stand for trolls. They don't have they are an outrage association in that they're just there to, you know, make some noise and make sure that everybody knows that their rights and what they are being activists on is being heard. And I really never hear too much about PETA advancing much other than anytime I hear PETA's storylines or PETA's criticizing somebody or PETA's outraged about something. What are you doing to fix the problem?
Yeah, so I mean, and the crazy thing is, PETA is headquartered here in Virginia, so they're like, a matter of fact, they're probably about a 20-minute, 30-minute drive. So yeah, PETA has their boogeyman in Mike Vick, and you know, I mean, he did play into it, he did you know, commit those crimes, but by the same token, you know, in America we are a country of second chances, and you know, he's. To Mike's credit, like you said, he hasn't been one of these guys that got a second chance and then went back and screwed up.
Yeah.
So
people for the ethical trolling of African Americans. I think that's
So yeah, Peter, in the eloquent words of Marcus Vick, y'all still on that bullshit.
Yeah.
So that's where we're gonna end the A block. We're gonna end segment one. But coming up next is a fellow podcaster, a friend of the program, and the reigning and defending Kings of Sport Bracket Challenge winner, Jamie
Rock.
Host of Mr. Throwback Thursday, a great podcast out there. And the good thing about this is we were supposed to do this 2 weeks ago when you and Marcus did the LA takeover, and I was in parts unknown. So it's good that we have a chance to redo this because, you know, sometimes, folks, if you ever wonder where does Nate go when he disappears, you know, I mean, sometimes people think I'm like the suntan Superman, but my kryptonite would probably be females. And sometimes when things happen, brown liquor gets imbibed and time gets away from you and you end up in the backyard singing old Motown songs. Gotta keep on trucking, baby. Gotta keep on trucking. Like, is that Eddie Kendrick? No, that's just drunk Nate in the backyard again. So, fortunately, no problem this week. Everybody is sober and we gonna talk to the one and only Mr. Throwback Thursday coming up next. Stick and stay. More Kings of Sport. Right after this.
Hey everybody, you remember when hip-hop was full of dope MCs, fly DJs, and human beatboxes? We do too. My name is Jamie Robinson and people call me Mr. Throwback Thursday. And along with my co-host Bill Winters, we take you back to that better time. So come join us every Throwback Thursday for some classic hip-hop discussion, a few tunes, and check in on some people you thought weren't even out there anymore. You can get us on iTunes, Stitcher, and always at our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheMrTBT or just search for Mr. Throwback Thursday. We're the only one out there. And always remember, new school stale, old school fresh.
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. It's the Kings of Sport, thekingsofsport.com.
And we are back on the Kings of Sport. Like we mentioned in the A block, it's been a crazy week in the world of sports. A lot of things going on the hardwood. Some players finding new homes on the gridiron. And, you know, we always like to bring people in to talk about what's going on in the world of sports, but also what's going on with them. And one of our favorite guests is back. He's a friend of the program. He's now a fellow podcaster, and he is the reigning and defending Kings of Sport March Madness Bracket Challenge Champion. And without any further ado, it's one half of the Mr. Throwback Thursday podcast. Mr. Throwback Thursday himself, Brother Jamie Robinson. What's going on, man?
How's it going, fellas?
What's up, Jamie?
Yeah, sitting here watching this mess of a Syracuse game.
I was going to say, did Alfred pick that on his bracket?
I'm pretty sure he didn't lose that one.
I didn't have Syracuse going too far, but I know I had them going past this round.
For those that don't know, because of scheduling, like I forgot and Marcus forgot and we all forgot, the bracket challenge, we didn't put it up until Wednesday, I think.
The one percenter bracket challenge.
Yeah, and so now there's only five people in it. And
just the hardcores.
And there's only four people with completed brackets, Alfred not being one of them.
Oh, well, I thought my bracket was complete. I know I have one bracket.
Oh, no.
Not done? Are you
that
sure?
That is my guarantee this year, as bad as my bracket is that I'm going to beat you again.
Okay, are you talking about Alfred's, like, because the bracket I completed was that nasty. Did that not make it into the Kings of Sport bracket pool?
The bracket that is besides your name is empty.
It's like 0 out of 63.
Yes.
Because I know there's two, and that's the one that made it. Because I know, I'm telling you right now, I have that nasty. I thought that was submitted. I call shenanigans.
Like, yeah. Okay, I understand, you know, you did not want me to beat on you again. So you, by having this little mistake, you said, oh, I would have had it, but.
This is some bullshit. I'm going to screenshot my entire bracket, and we're going to go with that bracket when it wins this whole entire thing. It's going to be like, we're going to need an undisputed champion. Like, I'll be the interim champion if I win because of the technicalities. But then next year will be for the undisputed title,
you got,
Jamie.
You got, like, the opposite of the perfect bracket.
Maybe I should get, like, what? I should pay $1 billion?
Yes. You pay Warren Buffett $1 billion.
I get a bill from Quicken Loans in the mail.
Yeah, so yeah, there's one thing I am sure of, and it is that Alfred Cunnell will not be unseating Jamie from the championship this year, but, who knows? It's been a lot of upsets, man. What are some of the games that kind of stuck out to you early on?
The Dayton game, that was a great game to watch. Dayton over Ohio State. Obviously, that one I did not pick, but that was a great game to watch.
You have, Mercer.
Who? Nobody had Mercer. The kids who played for Mercer did not have Mercer. But I did love that game. That was a great game.
You know, what about VCU? Shout out to our mutual friend, Bobby Fresh.
Bobby Fresh, yeah, I'm sure. But Bobby had the right thing. He said, even if we lose, which they did, nobody's going to talk about it. And why? Because Duke took all them headlines same day.
Good for them.
Yep. Yeah, now there's been a few of them out there, you know, messing me up pretty good.
I forget, I'm not looking at your bracket. Who do you have winning the whole thing?
I have the orange.
Oh, are you serious?
Yep.
As bad as they look in the second half of the season?
Well, and that's what I was saying. I said, yeah, I'm expecting, you know, first half Syracuse to show up. And, you know, first game they did. This game is not looking well.
They're hanging on by a thread. They see the big three, and they need to stop, and we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah, what's Syracuse got in the conference play? Like, the ACC, it looked like they had something to prove. Like, they felt some type of way.
Well, yeah, you know, coming out of the Big East, walking in, going, okay, well, we gotta get out of the Big East, and you know, we have to be somebody over here.
Yeah, so yeah, we got the fantasy challenge going, the bracket challenge. We got baseball. Like, I'm not even in a baseball mood right now, but we got fantasy baseball kicking off. I think our league drafts next Saturday because we're on CPT.
Aren't we all, though?
I say, like we, Marcus didn't hear this week, so we needed a light-skinned brother to step in. So that's why we had to call Jamie. Well, before we hit on the hip hop, let's talk about your beloved Jets and a local to you and me product headed to Gotham City. Mike Vick and the Jets, you like it? And what are your thoughts on Mark Sanchez leaving town?
Yeah, well, Dirty Sanchez should have left town last year. I think that he does have an axe to grind with Rex for costing him last season. Because, you know, there's no reason he should have been in that preseason game that got him all screwed up. But I'm happy to see him go because he was never, and I say this about most of the quarterbacks we get, he was never an NFL quarterback. He didn't have the time as a starter in college, and he walked into New York and just got thrust in, like, go win us games.
And that's what he did, though.
He did for the first two seasons. And then right. I don't know what the hell happened to him.
Yeah, and the thing is, he didn't. I don't think he had the appropriate weapons to develop. I think the Jets were always Rex Ryan, to a fault, was always more concerned about his defense than offense.
Defense, always.
He is a defensive mind, and he's a very good one. Never been very good at developing offense.
No, and we did have a good offensive line, and I think that's the only reason Sanchez is still alive.
Right.
Because, you know, they did hold him off as long as possible for him to not find any receivers because we didn't have any. But we fixed that, though. We got at least one receiver now.
Easy.
And he could be in the mix for Deshaun. And I was about to say, yeah, it's, and D-Jax is out there. Now, if we were to have him and Decker and Vic at the helm, we could have a passing game again. You know, we've always been a run-first offense, but, you know, Bilal Powell is not the answer to that question.
No, not at all. And I'm surprised he even still has a job. And he did overachieve last season.
But oh, yes, Bilal Powell,
they need to really go in on a running back. I wouldn't get him through the trade or free agency. You don't want to use Carr, but they really need to do their homework and invest in a running back because the New York Jets' attack is built for the run. As good as they are on defense, then they can hold the ball and slow the game down with the running attack, but they've never been able to get that guy.
No, we haven't had that guy since Curtis Martin. Yeah. LT filled in very nicely. He was a surprise. You know, he carried us fairly well. But Curtis Martin has been our last, you know, quality running back.
Right. And Thomas Jones was a running back for a stretch there with the Jets, right?
Yes, he was.
Okay, so, yep. I mean, he was all right. He's always been a little better than he should have been, the strong runner, but still, they need a franchise.
Yes, and we have not had one since Curtis. You know, it's just like a quarterback. We haven't had a good quarterback since Vinny T. Oh, sorry.
shots fired at your man Favre.
Oh, intercepted. Oh, there goes just as good.
Update, Syracuse has just gone down.
And, I figured they had.
But yeah, real quick on Sanchez. Like I've never been a fan of his. I've always said that Mark Sanchez is Spanish from Atlantic.
It is. Yeah.
The same dude.
Yeah, and same results. You know, he'll end up somewhere as a clipboard holder. You know, a couple of years. Somebody will get hurt. He'll play again. You know, maybe he should take the Greg McElroy way out.
I bet you eventually he'll end up in Seattle.
Oh, sure.
Pete Carroll just bringing in all his old plays.
Yep. And he'll have the hat on backwards and the clipboard in hand, and everything will be all right.
I remember it was kind of sour grapes when Mark Sanchez left USC. I remember the ceremony he had when he was about to leave, when he announced that he's going to the NFL. Pete Carroll got a little hot, and it got pretty awkward with Carroll saying, essentially, I hope you know what you've gotten yourself into. So
Pete was just mad he was messing up his money, all them shady deals he had under the table. Now, man, you know we still got to pay on Reg's mama's house.
Yes.
You messing this up for everybody, Mark.
Oh, but Rex said I had nice feet.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one thing, at least for the Jets the past couple seasons, if you're into defeat, the Jets are your team.
Yes.
Shout out to Rex. But Yeah, the reason we really wanted to have Brother Jamie on is because we haven't talked to you since, at least talked to you on the show, since you debuted the podcast with Throwback Thursday. I believe, what, you're on episode 8?
Yeah, now? we just put 8 out last week. We'll be recording 9 a couple days.
Yeah, for anybody that doesn't know, it's a quality podcast. You can find it wherever you find any other podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, all that good stuff. And my favorite thing is that, you know, it's a crazy premise because it's like, you know what? I want to talk about the history of hip hop. Who should I get? I know these two white guys over here.
Yep.
And Jamie and Bill Winters is the co-host, and they come in, and there's a lot, man. I'm a hip hop head, and I learn stuff by listening to the show. And, you know, there's the, what is it, the old to the new?
Yep.
Where you got the old artist, I think this past week, the classic artist, it was Onyx back
when. We had Onyx, yeah.
Yeah. And it's you got to go back and listen to episode 8 just to hear those tracks because it's like Onyx didn't lose a step.
Yeah, Onyx. And it was cool because, you know, Fredro let us have 3 tracks. We recorded on Monday, and their new record came out on Tuesday. He gave us 3 tracks and said, here, use these if you want them. You know, and that's the coolest thing. We've been getting a whole lot of support, you know, and for no reason. You know, we ask people, hey, you know, this is what we're doing. Would you mind helping out, hooking us up? And everybody's been supportive. It's been really cool.
Yeah, one of the things I like is like you said, there's that interaction. And, you know, you just hear from the drops of people like MC Surge, Onyx, like we mentioned. We got it. My favorite one, you sent it to me, before, I think before you even put it on the show, was one from DMC.
Yeah, that was really cool.
How'd you go across getting that one?
Same way I get a lot of them. I get on Twitter, and, you know, and I've been following all these guys since I had a Twitter account, you know, and,
right.
You know, I send shout outs to them every once in a while. I say, hey, I'm listening to this or I'm listening to that, and I tag them all in it. And when we got started, I don't know, probably like middle of January when we really started putting this thing together, saying we're going to do it. And so I started sending messages to some of these guys that followed me, you know, and I was like, hey, you know, this is what we're going to do. Any chance you give us a drop for the show? We're just getting started, so I got nothing for you to listen to. But here's the premise of what we want to do. We want to get the music that we grew up with and that you performed, you know, into the ears and into the hands of the younger kids that aren't being subject to it. You know, they're being fed all this bullshit on the radio, and we want to do this. And man, I've had 0 no's. Well, no, I can't say that. I got 1 no. I got 1 from Terminator X. Because he said, I'm not comfortable talking. You know, he said, I'm going to work on something. And when I get something together, I will let you know. But aside from that, there have been, nobody has said no. And that's the coolest thing to me.
One missed opportunity to get old classic music into the ears of young people was November 9th, which passed last year. I don't know if you know, that was the 20th anniversary of 36 Chambers. And Wu-Tang, I've gone on record saying it's my favorite rap group of all time. And mm-hmm. They were unable to put together a reunion album. And I read an article, too, about it in Grantland recently that RZA is still trying to get that together, but it just doesn't look like it's going to come together. What do you think it's going to take to get Wu-Tang back together? And if they do you think it's going to be a monumental occasion, given the fact that they missed a huge anniversary?
They did. Excuse me. They did miss a huge opportunity. They really did. But Wu-Tang is such a huge entity. You know, you just say Wu-Tang and people know who you're talking about. I mean, it's really, really hard for somebody who have never heard of them. They may not know their music, may not like their music, but they know who they are.
What was that kid at the Winter Olympics that threw up the Wu-Tang sign?
Yeah, I saw that. So you see, they... especially with movies, you know, like with How High and then RZA with Man with the Iron Fist.
Yes.
You start getting all these things that are going outside of their music where people say, yeah, that's that guy from Wu-Tang. So if they can get their shit together, and I've heard that they're hanging on one person that's holding this whole thing up. But if they can get it together, the minute they come back together, it's going to be giant. I mean, even if it's for one record, it could be one show. Something like that is going to be earth-shaking. It really is.
Yeah, because I don't want the last good memory of Ghostface that people have for him to be on that Couples Counseling on VH1.
No. Yeah, Too Short was on there, too.
Yeah. That's how we get in checks these days?
Okay. Yay. Do what you got to do. Everybody got to hustle.
Yeah, man.
Sometimes you pick it. Sometimes it picks you.
Another reason I wanted to have you on the show, and you and I have talked about this, is what's the years that you focus on in terms of classic hip hop on Mr. Throwback Thursday?
We like to cover, and I say early 70s because there is some stuff that falls in there, but from inception to about 96. 96 is really our cutoff date. There is some good stuff after that, but that's not the era that we like to focus on.
Yeah, I would agree. But there is somebody on this panel, on this show today that says that there's a young man that is the greatest MC of all time.
Of all time.
I disagree. I think he's in the discussion, but I would not put him at my number one spot or even in my top five. But
numero uno.
Brother Alfred says Eminem is the greatest MC of all time. What say you, James?
I say he's delusional, but it could come from being young and not understanding what hip hop really means, where some of these people come from, what they've gone through, what they have done to bring us this art form. But if you take Eminem and you put him up next to Rakim, they don't call him the God MC for nothing. Rakim.
Now, are you talking about a battle rap? Because always remember that's where Eminem
came up. Right, no. I'm just saying, if you had Rakim, take a record, go back to Paid in Full, because that's, I think, where he did his best stuff. You take Rakim during that time period and you listen to his stuff. And then you take Eminem, I don't know, pick a record, because they're all pretty much the same.
They're all incredible. Except when he's on drugs, but even then he was able to spit. I still don't understand.
No. I don't take anything away from him as an MC. I really, really do like him. But if you're talking best of all time, Grandmaster Caz is just the most incredible MC lyrically. You just read his stuff. He's got a book out, by the way, called Written, The Lyrics of Grandmaster Caz. It's got all his old notebook pages just put into a book. It's really cool. I got a copy.
And these are all very good mentions. I'm very excited to hear you say these names. And I do have an appreciation for all hip hop, and I do think that old hip hop is better than new hip hop. But we're in an era where you can't consider Eminem. I know hip hop is relatively young, but if you look at how young hip hop is, Eminem would be one of the legends. He's not new school. He's more old school.
Oh no,
in multiple generations.
Yes, no, I agree, and I would probably put him. I would say top 10 with no question.
Okay.
Yeah,
I understand the top five.
I don't see him being there.
I would put him, I would obviously put him at the top one, but I'm talking about the discussion of greatness. So let's say I was some kid who didn't listen to hip hop back in the 70s, which is not true. I love all hip hop, but let's say that my value of Eminem was tainted by me being younger. I'm talking about greatness. And when I'm talking about greatness, what is greatness? I'm talking about the entire scope. I'm not talking about just hip hop. I'm talking about the entire scope of greatness, to where not only are you selling records, not only are you being true to the game, not only do you have longevity, but you have talent. And Eminem is an A+ in all four categories. In all categories that you want to assess greatness, he's a great rapper. I mean, yes, you could say Eric Bay, who the hip hop guy is like you and me, he's our CM Punk. You know, nobody's going to say CM Punk is the greatest wrestler of all time, but we know CM Punk is a better wrestler than Hulk Hogan, than a Rock. But if you look at greatness, who's great? The Rock is a great one, and CM Punk is an internet dirt sheet guy.
Yes, I'll give you that. Yeah, I cannot argue that point.
That was a good comparison. Good job, Alfred.
Why do you guys sound so surprised?
Well, yeah, I like Jamie said, I've got him in my top 10. I think I tend to, when I do my ranking, it's not just the lyricism, it's not just the album sales, but it's what you're talking about. And right. You talk about a guy like Rakim or a guy like KRS-One. Probably, I'd say my favorite MC, and I'm not going to go as far to say he's the greatest MC, but my favorite MC, even though he's been in a group, is probably Chuck D, just in terms of what he says, his delivery, the flow. And I think
I love that low tone that he raps in.
Yeah, and he's actually saying something. And I think that you know, Eminem, like you said, he's, if there's a hip hop Hall of Fame, I don't know if there is or not, but Eminem's in the hip hop Hall of Fame first ballot. Yes. But then it's kind of like when we had that quarterback discussion a couple weeks ago. There's 10 seats at the table, and how you rank those seats is subjective, but I don't think that Eminem is at the head of the table.
No.
That's where me and you disagree.
And, I think he's sitting at the kids' table.
We're talking about the greatest two. And a lot of people, let me just say something, Kevin, and I will preface this because this is going to come down like a hammer. I will preface this by saying I love
like
Biggie.
Like an MC Hammer?
MC Hammer. Yeah.
Very nice.
Alfred, they said you ain't. They said you ain't hitting in New York. What you going to do about that?
Alfred?
I'm going to turn this mother out.
Too so, big MC.
Love Biggie more than, I thought Biggie was a better rapper than Tupac. But in terms of greatness, again, if we're ranking people, I have Tupac way ahead of Biggie, and I don't even have Biggie number two. I don't understand the Biggie second greatest of all time. I think he gets an incomplete, only in that he came out with two albums, and if you're looking at body of work, that cannot hold up as somebody who's the greatest of all time. Am I delusional here, or is Biggie really the second greatest rapper of all time, like I keep hearing?
No, see, that's another thing I take issue with. There's all that hype, you know, early March, you know, the greatest MC died on this day, the greatest MC died on this day, you know, and I don't see it. It may be because he came later, and I don't see him the way that the people, you know, I still consider him old school because he was in that era. But he was coming in as music was starting to go down, and I think he was very good. I'm not taking anything away from him as an MC. But as the music was starting to fall off, he was a constant. So he started to look better because the rest of everybody was falling off. I think that's why he gets such high praise. Plus, he wasn't around long. He hit hard when he started, and then he was gone.
And yeah, that's why I think his legacy has grown, is that he died when he was at his peak.
I mean, he never had a chance to fall off. I mean, if you look at a guy like LL, where LL has had ups and downs, peaks and valleys.
Lots of valleys.
Yeah, if you just took, like, let's say you took LL's first three records and then, God forbid, he died.
Right.
We'd be talking about him in a totally different way. And I think with Biggie, yeah, those first two records were hot, you know, and I still think Life After Death may be one of my favorite hip hop records. But by the same token, I don't have him in my top five. You know, I prefer Tupac, and I hate to say it. I hate to say it because as a hip hop head, it kind of hurts. But I think if I'm doing the rankings, I might put Jay-Z above Biggie.
I absolutely would. I wouldn't even put him in any type of – I'd put him in, like, the Terrell Davis category, where Terrell Davis had the greatest two-year stretches of any running back or player in the NFL, winning championships, just a dominant running back that got hurt. So now when you talk about the greatest running backs, you talk about him and, like, well, what could have been? And I think Biggie's the same way. Who's to say that Biggie wasn't going to fall off? Like, you look at Biggie's track record.
He had pissed Dookie with him, so, you know.
Rude and the logs. And, you know, Danny Kane and the band and all these acts that fall off. Yeah, that just fall off. Who's to say that Biggie would have successfully managed Biggie's career long term? I don't think he would have.
No, because he killed Craig Mack's career in order to make Biggie's career.
Exactly.
And that one still pisses me off. I'm a big Craig Mack fan.
Yeah, Craig Mack, I don't know what it was. Like, I remember when they first came out and it was like they were advertising as, was it Big Mac?
Big Mac.
Yeah.
Which was clever. I have to give that one to Puff Daddy, Piss Dookie, as you call him.
Yes.
I give him that one. But and I think he's a great producer. But when he became Puffy or Dick and got in front of the mic,
And that's what we say. That is my only heartache with him. He was an incredible producer. He really was. But when he stepped out in front of the mic, bad boy, it was over. You do not belong there.
But you know what? I think the fact that Diddy stepped out in front of the mic is another thing that helps Biggie's legacy, is that his first album that really hit was when he was talking about Biggie, and he rapped about Biggie, I'll Be Missing You. That was such a big hit that people, you know, had this sort of reverence for Biggie just by hearing that song, and they heard it over and over again, and that helped the legacy of Biggie. So I think that probably was the most productive thing Diddy ever did.
And that is the thing that I hate most that he ever did, because that was his jump in front of the microphone, look at me by myself, and he was capitalizing on Biggie dying.
That's exactly what he was doing.
And that's the thing that makes me hate him so much.
And if you look at it, he really has not been able to sustain success with anybody since.
Oh, no. What's he going to do, bring Mace back for a resurgence?
For the third time?
Yeah, get the hell out of here.
Yeah. I know he's crazy and we talk about him all the time, but I think when it's all said and done, if you look at producers that get on the mic, and I'm like Jamie, I'm not a fan of it, I put Kanye ahead of Diddy in both production and...
I think there's a genius quality to Kanye West that we've never seen in hip-hop. We've seen it in music, but it just it's like he's so crazy. When you look at the real-life Kanye West, the only reason he's still around with all the shit that he does, because like if Justin Bieber's going to fall off and all these crazy, even Chris Brown eventually is going to fall off, just based on these meltdowns, Kanye West is still around because his music is purely genius. I mean, it's whether you agree with
that's because you're drinking that Kanye Kool-Aid. that man has told you he's a genius so many times that you believe it.
I thought he was genius just because he's so awkward when you see how he interacts with people. You see the qualities he's got. He's got these qualities where he doesn't know how to interact in the regular day-to-day society. But when you put him in his little chamber,
he's so much greater than everybody else.
He's a sociopath. He's a sociopath. And that's what I think ties into his legacy as a genius. I'm kind of knocking him by calling him a genius. He's not a normal human being.
No, he is not. No. Running around wearing skirts.
That's just because you ain't got the answers, Jamie.
I know.
You ain't got the answers, man. You ain't
I'm
been doing
to ask the question.
But yeah, look, Alfred may be drinking the Kanye Kool-Aid, but I got my little red cup here because as anybody that listens to Mr. Throwback Thursday knows, you have got to stay hydrated.
That's the truth. That's Bill's problem. I'm telling you. That's why he's sick.
But yeah, we'll have to have Bill back on. What's the Stanley Cup kickoff, Alfred?
Stanley Cup is summer, isn't it? June, July?
Yeah, it should be.
Okay, we'll have to get him on before then. We'll have, because I know Bill's big into hockey, and as we discovered this past week on Mr. Throwback Thursday, he's into some wrestling too, so we can talk about wrestling with Bill.
Oh, let's talk a little wrestling.
I remember watching WrestleMania 3 with Bill.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how we go back.
Oh, like when it was airing? Like originally?
Yeah.
Right? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What's your thoughts on Mr. T going into the WWE Hall of Fame?
I think it's deserved. He was there. Come on. Clubber Lang? Of course.
I think he should have been in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you look at some of these other people that have gone in.
Like, you know what happened? Like, I didn't know until I listened to one of our friend's shows this past weekend. They had offered it to him a few years back, and he turned it down because he was like, hold on, you bringing in Pete Rose and Drew Carey and all these people before Mr. T? Like, no.
Especially if you have a celebrity win. You look at Mr. T's impact. People look at WrestleMania 1, and if you look at how big of a gamble that was, Mr. T was the one who really helped Vince cash his chips and helped the WWE become a worldwide phenomenon. So
yeah.
I put Mr. T with Donald Trump, who was integral in their success, just as a mainstream star who helped get WWE over.
Hell yeah.
I mean, you look at the WrestleMania 1 video cover, and it's not just Hulk Hogan. It's Hulk Hogan and Mr. T.
And Mr. T, yes. I was looking through my stuff the other day. I found the first season VHS tape of Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling.
Yes, dude, save that and sell it.
I have it. It's been tough for me. I was taking a whole bunch of stuff to the thrift store. I said, I can't get rid of this stuff. And I saw that, and it stayed.
You can't get rid of that.
No, it stayed. It's still here. It's sealed.
Oh, you could seriously, I'm not even kidding. You can make a lot of money off of that.
Really?
You could, yeah.
It's one of those things I picked up.
So how much you willing to pay, Jamie Alfred? You seem very interested in this item.
Well, I should have told him all this, so maybe I could have worked him before.
Yeah, no, beforehand it would have been, yeah, that's not worth much, but I'll take it off your hands.
Oh, man, yeah. So, before we let you go, Jamie, what do you got coming up on the show? I do want to know what guest or what artists have you contacted and been in contact with that, you know, we talked about the drops and everything. Is there somebody out there that you're like, oh, man, I would love to talk to that person. Maybe not the biggest MC, but somebody that really interests you and Bill.
there's one, and since you listened to episode 8, you know my thing with Invincible.
Yes.
And Invincible is the most incredible MC post-1996. I don't care. To come out post-96, she is incredible.
Even better than Drake?
Slightly, but you know.
Was there hip hop before Drake?
No, she she stopped. She's working with Complex Movements now. It's a big artist collective, you know, and they've got a visual artist, and then her, and then a writer, and they're doing all this stuff in Detroit because she's an activist and a whole bunch of things. And one of her big things is getting Detroit back to where it should be. And they're going out, and she's decided to stop doing her own stuff and put her money where her mouth is, basically, and say, look, I told you you need to do this. Let's go do it. So we did get a hold of her, and she said, I can't do anything for the show because I'm not doing any solo work anymore. I'm doing all this other stuff. So it kind of sucked. I would really like to have her on, you know, aside from all the givens, you know, KRS, Rakim, Chuck D.
Flavor Flav.
I would love to have her on the show.
You can probably get him.
I know.
You can probably get Flavor Flav.
Talking about Cracky Tales.
Snake Roberts. But no, and one other one I would really like to get, we did get a drop from him, I just haven't been able to hook up with him yet, is Chi Ali.
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Because, you know, he's out of jail, he's putting out new music, and I'd really like to talk to him, and not bring up the murder or nothing, but you know.
Hey, Lil Boosie just got out of jail, you gonna interview him?
No. I am trying, I will tell you guys, I'll break it here. I am in talks with Chip Foo from the Fushnikins.
Oh!
And we've been talking quite a bit, and we just got to get our schedules hooked up, and we're going to get an interview with him.
Fushnikins, of course, ties back into the world of sports because they had that record with Shaq.
They did indeed.
The Can We Rock? What's up, Doc?
What's up, Doc? I think Chip Foo was the greatest thing. When the Fushnikins' first record came out, the F You Don't Take It Personal, I picked that up on cassette. Didn't know who the hell they were. It was just one of them things. I walked in the store. There it was. I picked it up. And, man, I rewound that tape 500 times and wrote down every lyric to True Fushnik until I could get it right. And, yes. And to this day, I can still do that rhyme.
Man, I miss
that stuff. Never leaves you.
Like, that was a distinct style back in the day. You had the Fushnikins. You had
Punk Twister.
Das Effects.
Das Effects.
Yeah, Crazy Drazy.
Yes.
We dropped his stuff on the first episode.
It's very interesting to kind of see where the music has gone, and there are very few constants. And again, that's kind of why I would rank Jay-Z above Biggie, because he's, say what you will about his music, he's remained relevant. And we see so many great artists that disappear for whatever reason, and artists like Drake that are at the top of the charts. Hip hop is maybe more so than any form of music is the most fickle in terms of what people listen to.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's because a lot of it is because it's still not quite defined what hip hop is. It's easy to, like, you know, it can just go so many different ways that people can interpret it whatever they want.
When Billy Ray Cyrus got a damn hip hop remix to Ache It Break Your Heart Out, man.
That's not hip hop, I'll tell you that.
Piss Dookie behind that one.
Oh man. And Miley Cyrus is on a rap track now, isn't she?
Get the hell out of here.
Number 23 with a Mike Will. Yeah, yes. Jay's on my feet. Miley Cyrus is rapping. It's like,
I tell you, you know who else has got a track? You watch NCIS?
Yeah.
The original, not the lip licking one. what's her name? Abby. The lab rat girl?
Really?
Pauly Perrette.
Yeah.
She's got a track with DMC.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Wow. DMC, I'm going to talk like I'm somebody. DMC sent me an autographed t-shirt, and one of the things that he sent along with it was like this one sheet, like a little bit bigger than a coaster, and it said, check out this track by DMC and Pauly P. And I'm looking at the pictures, and it looks like that girl Abby from NCIS pulled it up on YouTube. I was like, what the hell? That is her. So, yeah. DMC making comics now. Find out all kinds of stuff talking to these guys.
Yeah. So let us know when you talk to them, because we might, you know, we are the kings of sport.
Yes, yes.
We might have to talk to one of the kings of rock.
And he is the one, because Run ain't talking to nobody.
No. Run's sitting back collecting them checks. That's what Run is doing.
Rev Run, I tell you, if you check him out on Twitter, you know, he's got that Rev Run wisdom. He follows zero people.
He's one of those guys. How many followers does he get? He probably gets
a ton. He's a ton. And you know, if they don't follow me, I can't get a hold of them.
Yeah.
But
I did. I tracked a few of them down by email, though. That's how I got a hold of Fife Dog. You know, you start sending emails out. Somebody's gonna listen when you send about 15 of them.
That's how we found Hollywood Simpson.
Yes, sir. It is.
Alfred tracked him down.
That's what Bill always says to me. He goes, "You're retired. You stay home all day. You find these people. I'll show up and record." I love him to death, though. He does a hell of a job. He really does. I wouldn't be able to do the show without him.
If you just looked at the summary or the premise of the show, you're like, all right, two white dudes sitting around talking about classic hip hop. But it is a good show, and I'm not just saying this because you're on the show. I actually listen to the program each and every week on Stitcher while I'm at work. So it's good work. It's good stuff, and you can. It's funny because we just passed our first year, so now it's like once you hit a year in podcasting, you're a veteran of some sort.
Older statesman.
So I'm like, okay, and now it's good to see, like, because I know you've been thinking about this show for a while.
Well, yeah, you broke us on the show before we were sure we were going to do it.
So
we kind of had to at that point.
Hey, sometimes somebody got to put you on the spot.
That's right.
It's already broken. Might as well.
But bring it back to Eminem. Sometimes you got to get on the stage. Everybody got to hand you a mic, Rabbit.
That's right.
Let B-Rabbit do a podcast. That's how we bring it all together. Before we let you go, though, tell people where they can find the show and go ahead and plug the Twitter account and all that good stuff, Facebook, all that.
All right. We're all over the place. We're on Facebook. It's Mr. Throwback Thursday. And if you've heard the commercial run on your guys' show, we're the only ones there. Make sure it's Mr. Throwback Thursday. On Twitter, we're at @MR_TBT. If you want to send us an email, you know, it's MRThrowbackThursday@gmail.com. You know, and then iTunes, Stitcher. Hey, have you checked out, I know you're podcast land. You see they got a new Short Orange player over there?
Yeah.
So you can listen right there now.
Both Podcast Land and Stitcher, I think about 2 weeks ago, Stitcher updated their settings. So now it's like, it used to be you could only get the last 5 episodes.
Yeah.
Now you can go back to the complete archive, which is good for, you know, if you missed a couple shows here and there.
Yeah, I only got 8 shows, so it doesn't matter to me.
Hey, you on the way now. You on the way.
Yep. And I do have to say one thing before we run out. Fuck Gene Simmons.
Yeah, if you don't know what that means, go back and listen to the last episode, and you too will be saying fuck Gene Simmons.
Hey, did you see on the Facebook page, we got Grandmaster Caz wearing one of our T-shirts?
Yes, I did see that. I did see that.
That's the coolest thing that's happened to me so far.
No wonder you were putting over so strong.
Hell yeah.
Unfortunately, though, I saw the update like an hour later, and Big Bang Hank stole it. Boom. Know your history, kids. Where did Hank get that T-shirt from?
Yeah, why does it say GMC on the T-shirt?
Oh man,
he's the Grandmaster with 3 MCs. Yeah. Sugar Hill only got 3. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, that was another good show when y'all talked about Rapper's Delight. So yeah, go do yourself a favor. If you're even remotely interested in hip hop or rap music, go and check out Mr. Throwback Thursday. And we will talk to you down the road, Brother Jamie. Send Bill our best, and we'll have to have him on and chat about some hockey and some wrestling in the future.
Sound like a plan.
All right, that's Brother Jamie Robinson from Mr. Throwback Thursday. We are the Kings of Sport, and we're coming back with the Ringside Rap right after this.
Hulk Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga! promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
What's that? Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on PlaceToBeNation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
The Titans are wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry.
The Titans are wrestling off.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on, party people? It's your man, Nate, sitting here in the studio putting this edition of the Kings of Sport together. And you know, as great as technology is, sometimes with every blessing, there is a curse. And we were definitely cursed by the podcasting gods this week. So for the next two segments, the Ringside Wrap and Segment 4, you're going to hear some great conversation between Big Nasty and myself, but it's not going to be a complete conversation. And we didn't want to not give you guys some of this good conversation that we had. So you're going to get the incomplete form, and hopefully the next episode of the podcast will come to you guys as a complete and total package. So without any further ado, here's the Ringside Wrap, or most of the Ringside Wrap, and we hope you guys enjoy it.
And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
WWE doesn't listen to the fans, and to the, I mean, I think they listen to them too much, especially Triple H. And this is what you're going to see in the Triple H era, is that all these little dirt sheet comments and internet type outrage, it's always going to make its way onto the main screen, as it has with Triple H in charge. If you watch that first segment they did on Raw with Triple H, Batista, and Randy Orton, it was like every comment they made on one each another was something that was born out of a dirt sheet criticism, you know? Randy Orton, you're a paper champion, and Batista, the fans don't care about you anymore, and Triple H saying he's tired of Hollywood movie stars coming back to tell him how to run business. This is all stuff you find on message boards that Triple H is very aware of. So I don't know if this is going to be great for business. I do think it is a more interesting stipulation because you should have had a double stip to where Triple H is just too good and too much of a legend to be somebody's stepping stone. So this puts it on an even playing field. And honestly, Nate, I'm not 100% sure that Daniel Bryan wins this match. I really do think there's going to be a lot of angst in the building, and I can't wait to see that atmosphere.
Yeah, I think he wins the match. The only thing that is even remotely in doubt is if he goes over. I still think he's going to win the title at WrestleMania, but there's a part of me that thinks that they will pull a WWE and either give him the belt and then take it back quickly like we saw at SummerSlam, or Batista wins and then that's the program heading into SummerSlam, Batista and Daniel Bryan.
Do you see a chain finish, a dusty finish, where Triple H and Daniel Bryan maybe pin each other at the same time and now it's a fatal four-way?
I wouldn't want to see that. I mean, there have been some good multi-man matches over the years. Like one of my favorite matches of all time is probably that match from Unbreakable in TNA with AJ, Daniels, and Joe.
Yes.
For the main event at WrestleMania, I think even the three-man is pushing it a little bit too far, because I think your main event at WrestleMania should be a one-on-one for the title. I understand why they had to put Bryan in it. And I think it'll make the match better, but I think adding Triple H would be overkill.
It would, but I mean, and speaking of adding Triple H, like, if people were talking about how
the fans would reject Batista versus Randy Orton. Can you imagine if it was Batista or Triple H? Like, that's the only thing that would troll fans harder than having Batista and Orton come on last.
I told you Evolution was a mystery.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's a good storyline. I think they're back on track, and I agree with you in saying that this is how it should have been to begin with. And I think they just WWE just kind of corrected itself here and looked back, saying, you know what, we really should make this a double stick.
I mean, because, ironically, if you think about it, the Punk thing was probably the best thing that ever happened in WrestleMania.
Yes,
because if not for Punk, what would we have gotten? Bryan and Sheamus?
Yeah. It's like Punk's accident. I read an article, I think it was Kate Shine Seas. They said he accidentally saved WrestleMania. Because think of all, WrestleMania was going with Static. You saw there were 5 matches that leaked online, and they've all come to fruition, which Bray Wyatt versus John Cena, Daniel Bryan versus Triple H, and then the one match that has changed was Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus. It was the one match that has changed because of CM Punk, because it was going to be CM Punk versus Triple H. And that has completely changed several matches. I think that's the reason why they're doing what they're doing with the Shield, is that the Shield was originally intended to be a triple threat match, probably, but now that they see that they have to go triple threat with Daniel Bryan or Triple H in there, they don't want to have multiple triple threat matches.
And that's the one thing I think is hurt by that, because I was looking forward to seeing that triple threat with the Shield, and now when it's the 6-man with the Shield versus Kane and the New Age Outlaws.
Potentially, and imagine the story goes that New Age Outlaws just requested, we want to work with the Shield, and they're getting what they want. And I just think that's a bad spot for them, because they had such a good thing going with the Usos, and I don't feel like they've passed the torch in terms of tag team wrestling by doing the job to a hot young tag team at WrestleMania.
Yeah, that should have been the close to that feud, the Usos beating the Outlaws at Mania.
Yeah, and it seems like they hotshotted that in order to, they used that match as chum bait to soothe the Chicago crowd, which I think is very short-sighted by the WWE if they want to fortify that tag team division.
So what do you think we get now in terms of tag team, if anything, on the main card? Are the Usos and the Rhodes Brothers?
It's looking like it's going to be a group tag team scenario. I'm looking at probably the Real Americans, Rhodes Brothers get thrown in there, the Usos.
Los Matadores!
You never know. They could get their shot. It seems like WWE is really kind of as an I'm sorry, maybe, to guys who are going to be missing out on a big pay-per-view payday because the network is going to probably undercut what would have been their payday. WWE isn't late good. It's just kind of trying to throw as many guys on that show as possible, guys and divas, because now the divas look like they're going to have a group match at WrestleMania for anybody who cares. And then they're going to have the 30-man battle royal. You know, they're going to have all kinds of matches to where it seems like everybody on that roster is going to have a slot at WrestleMania. But another person who's going to have a slot at WrestleMania that you never would know is John Cena, who seems to be a face in this crowd for the first time, I think, ever. And if you look at the top matches at WrestleMania, it's the triple threat match with Daniel Bryan, potentially Triple H, Batista and Orton, and then you got the Daniel Bryan Triple H shoot, of course, and then you got Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, and then you look at John Cena, you say, oh, that's right, he's going to be in a mid-card feud with Bray Wyatt. So I want to ask you, Nate, has John Cena, for this year at WrestleMania 30, become the forgotten man in WWE?
In a sense, he has, but I think it's a step that he's needed to take. I think, you know, other than the main event, that Wyatt-Cena match may be the one I'm most interested in. And I've always felt that, you know, you can go back to the, I think it was Super Review of Raw when I was up in Toronto a couple years ago. And it was myself, Wei-Ting, John Pollock, and Damian Abraham. And one of the points I brought up was that John Cena, you know, he's Superman. Eminem said, I can't be your Superman. John Cena's like, I'll be your Superman, Vince. And I think if you look in the comics, you know, heroes have their time in the sun, then they disappear for a little bit. You know, the death of Superman, one of the biggest selling stories in comic history. And I think John Cena's problem is, you know, he's I'm not one of these guys that hates John Cena, but I do hate the way that his character's been portrayed. I do hate the way it's been booked, should I say, because I think he never shows vulnerability, and I think that there's been times where he's needed to take some time off, and they didn't do it because they didn't want to lose the revenue, but in exchange for getting some more money, getting a few more shekels, they have made the character stale. And so I think this Wyatt thing is a really good thing for both guys. It brings Cena into a level of realism where he's facing this guy that is not going to joke and kid around with him. And it also elevates Bray Wyatt, even if he loses, which I think he will, it puts him on the level of, you know, an upper mid-card / main event heel.
Yeah, and some cynical fans may say, what John Cena has been saying in his promos against Bray Wyatt, is Bray Wyatt doesn't care about winning. And some people will look at that and say, oh, he's just burying Bray Wyatt, and now he's going to just kind of bury the result of winning. And that's not what that is at all. It's building this character of Bray Wyatt, that this guy is out to do harm. And he's a scary force. And I like the fact that John Cena came out and said, I'm scared of Bray Wyatt, because it just builds this battle of good and evil. And it's like Bray Wyatt is this evil that nobody's ever seen before. It's just kind of a shame that this isn't a match that's for the title. Maybe I feel like they're a year away with this match. But I agree with you in that, and I wrote about this week on Bleacher Report, that either guy, no matter what happens, both guys should be benefiting. You know, no matter who loses or wins, it's like Bray Wyatt just worked John Cena. And as long as WWE sticks to their commitment with Bray Wyatt, he's already a star in their eyes. And then John Cena, he's been saying, you got to go through me. So either Bray Wyatt does that successfully and we get a passing of the torch, or John Cena continues to ride on, which is a very comforting fact to a lot of people.
And, you know, if, you know, kind of going ahead and playing fantasy booker, let's say Bryan wins the title and let's say they pull the trigger and put Bray over Cena, you've got a ready-made feud for, you know, Daniel Bryan's first title defense.
Exactly. Yeah, I completely agree. That's why I think Bray Wyatt might go over, is because Bray Wyatt beat Daniel Bryan. So now he's got an easy claim to the title. Like, he's already beaten Daniel Bryan, so now he should be the number one contender. And what they do at WrestleMania is kind of old-school booking, to where they'll have one big heel that they're really interested in going forward go over at WrestleMania. And that's the guy who almost inevitably challenges the man who won the title, the babyface who won the title at WrestleMania. So I do see potentially Daniel Bryan winning and Bray Wyatt being that big heel who goes over, and then that's your program. But, you know, we could see a Batista-Bryan program. There's so many ways they can go with this direction if Daniel Bryan is to be the WWE champion.
Yeah, and I, like I said, I would say I'm probably 80% sure that Bryan's going to win the title. If not Bryan, then Batista, and then they go to Batista-Bryan. And so it'll be interesting because, you know, Cena and Bryan still have unfinished business. So I think whoever wins the Cena-Wyatt match, they'll probably be the next in line if Batista doesn't get the first crack at Bryan's title.
Okay, early predictions, because these are always subject to change. We'll revisit this. But play fantasy booker with the Daniel Bryan situation. Okay, Daniel Bryan versus Triple H. Take that through to the end. Who do you think's going to win? Who's walking away at WrestleMania as champion?
Okay, I put Bryan over at Triple H, of course. Then Bryan wins the three-way. Then to SummerSlam, I go Bryan and Batista, and also I go Bray Wyatt versus Cena in a rematch, because I think if I'm doing the booking, I'm gonna put Bray over Cena, and then they'll have a rematch at SummerSlam, and then the winners of those two matches will face. That'll be your next big program.
Yeah. I can see that. I can absolutely see that.
As long as we keep Triple H out of the title picture, that is the most important component.
And you never know, I'm telling you.
I still got to catch Flair.
You know what I'm saying? Triple H goes over everybody. I'm just throwing that out there. But, you know, WWE WrestleMania is going to be, it's going to be a huge event, Nate, and it's going to be the first WrestleMania on the WWE Network. And, I don't know if you knew this, but one of the biggest subscribers to WWE Network, Jim Irsay. I'm sorry, that's his prescription, not subscription. Don't take the sport. Coming up next.
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, placetobenation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. Place to Be Nation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best and comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton.
I want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also, our friend Dave at TWFNews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also, check out PileDriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at RSPWFAQ.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is, oh, what is going on? Once again, it's your man Nate here in the studio putting this podcast together this week. And much like the Ringside Rap, segment 4 had some great topic, but it is incomplete. So I didn't want to not give you guys what Alfred and I discussed. So we're going to pick up the conversation at the tail end of our conversation about Jim Irsay, who, in a bit of karmic justice, has become the next inductee into the Cracky Tales Hall of Fame. So you're not going to get the full Irsay story, but I think you'll enjoy it. So here we go with segment 4, talking about Jim Irsay and the Israeli Basketball League. Say what?
Welcome back to the world's most dangerous sports show. Follow the danger online at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
He's not a jerk. He just high. I guess it's a very good excuse. It's a great out.
Well, hey, I didn't really mean all that stuff I said about you, Peyton, when I was throwing shade at you. It was the Ambien, baby.
That was a crack talking, man. Which reminds me.
The thing I'm interested in about this story, Alfred, is what is Roger Goodell's reaction to this, and what will be the fallout from this? Because as we've all known, you know, Commissioner Goodell, or Fidel Goodell, as Poppy Levitard calls him, he rules with an iron fist. And so, you know, you can't have one set of standards for the players and then another set of standards for the people that employ the players, who should be, by all accounts, held to a higher standard. And so
right.
I'm interested to see what he does with Irsay.
Absolutely. And some are already calling that, you know, owners and NFL GMs need to have drug testing, mandatory drug testing, because this is not the first time this has happened. And not only with Jim Irsay, but we saw that instance where separate Broncos executives were cited for DUIs. So they absolutely, if anybody needs to be held to the same standard as players, as owners, and I don't even think they need to be held to the same standard, greater standards. They should be even more scrutinized for these types of actions, because the entire franchise is in their hands. They can't just get cut, you know, in a lot of these positions. They're the ones making the decisions.
And you talk about owners and executives, you know, getting into stuff like this. I've always had a suspicion. I don't have proof of it, but let's just say allegedly, I've always had the feeling that Jerry Jones is on some type of drug, because you can't tell me that your face just melt that way, and that's not plastic surgery. He got to be taking some type of controlled substance to make his face morph and change in that fashion.
I think it's called Botox. I don't know if that's a drug or not, but
and Kenny Rogers on that stuff.
Some of the decisions he makes on the Cowboys front offices do seem like he's on drugs. The fact that he still has Jason Garrett around, maybe Jason Garrett is the one supplying him. Maybe he has that stash, and if he lets him go, he's not going to be able to get his fix.
It's like, and this is also why I like when Mark is in here sometimes, because we can talk about comic book stuff and sci-fi stuff. You remember that Batman the Animated Series?
Of course.
And you remember Clayface?
Yes.
You remember Clayface? When I'm like the very first time he showed up, when he was just a regular dude that was turned into Clayface, he had to keep going back and getting that chemical so he could stay a regular dude.
Yeah.
I think that's what Jason Garrett has on Jerry Jones. Like, come on.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. I like that.
You're like, come on, Jerry, you don't want to turn into a monster again, do you? All right, I'll re-sign you for another year. Oh, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know what Goodell does to Irsay. I mean, something's got to happen. Tony Dungy has come out, a former Colts head coach, led him to a Super Bowl, led him to two Super Bowls and one title, has said that, you know, something needs to be done here. And I don't think that's sour grapes from Tony's perspective. I think, you know, he's probably one of the most honest people in sports and especially in the NFL. And I think he's genuinely concerned for this dude. And, you know, it is a funny story to some extent, but it's also like, if you are that influential in a sport and especially in a town, you know, Marcus was just in Indianapolis. It's not called Naptown for a reason. It's not like there's a lot of things going on in that city. And the Ursays pretty much are royalty in that town, especially with Peyton Manning not being there anymore. And it's like you have to know who you are and where you are. And it just shows a lapse in judgment. And I think something's got to be done.
Yeah, and you mentioned Tony Dungy. Tony Dungy is one of the most non-judgmental people in the NFL. He's like the godfather. He's like the Dalai Lama. Not only does he look like Gandhi, but he's got a Gandhi-like influence. He's somebody who's worked with Jonathan Martin and Michael Vick, people in very difficult situations, and it came out in support of them. But when Tony Dungy comes out and says that something needs to be done in spite of you, that's when you know you've hit bottom and something really does need to be done. Because I'm not taking that as sour grapes. Tony Dungy's not going to make a comment like that just in jest. He legitimately feels that way, and Dungy's opinion is as valid as anybody's in the NFL.
Yeah, Tony Dungy's not Marcus Vick. Like, Jim Irsay still on that bullshit?
Yeah, he's literally still on that bullshit.
Yeah. So that's Jim Irsay. We had to give y'all some cracky tales this week, some Xanax tales, but yeah, it's a bad look, and as much as I have not liked some of Ursay's comments, at the end of the day, we're all human, so hopefully he can get it together.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody particularly likes them, like, other than Colts fanatics, but it's something that's just a fun caveat to have. Like, I wish every owner had some kind of character, but I guess that's what makes it Jerry Jones and Jim Irsay for the world stand out, is that they're the owners who aren't afraid to just be themselves.
Because they on them drugs, baby. Allegedly. Allegedly with Jerry Jones. I don't need those problems. But somebody who has created a bit of a problem is the mayor of Holon, Israel, Morty Sassoon, or Sassoon. And y'all ain't ready for this. I first saw this story, Bomani Jones, I think, was the first person I saw hop on this story, and I read it and I was like, really, man? 2014? In Israel, even? But let me just break it down what happened. The Israeli mayor was quoted Tuesday referring to black basketball players as niggas with a hard R. He said, I don't want to see foreigners in the Israeli basketball league. I want to see Israeli sportsmen. If you want to watch niggers, you have the NBA for that. Yeah, and I don't think that's Adam Silver's new slogan for the NBA. If you want to watch niggas, we got niggas.
What do you think the N stands for?
The Nigga Balling Association.
Yeah, and you know what kind of bothers me about this is this seems like an authoritative view of the NBA, which doesn't get a fair shake when it comes to crime. You look at the NFL, that's where all the crime is, but the NBA, they look at them, these young black men who you're able to see in plain sight. And a lot of these higher figures of authority, you know, the quote-unquote man, looks at the NBA and sees a bunch of thugs. They see a bunch of niggers, as an Israeli mayor would put it. And we saw this earlier because I believe it was the governor of Minnesota or a Minnesota political figure said something to the tune of, you know, there's if you want street crime, you know, you go to the NBA. And
I remember that.
That just seems to be the narrative of the NBA, something that they can't shake, even though it couldn't be further from the truth when you look at stars. The faces of the NBA, like Kevin Durant and LeBron James, and, you know, they're good kids that just play basketball and they support charities. And Obama has penned two NBA players, Kobe and LeBron, as two guys who are going to be spokespeople for his government, healthcare.gov. So the NBA is a citizenship league, but it just doesn't get that credit.
No, and the thing is, it's just a stupid thing to say. I mean, it's not like these players are overrunning the Israeli league. Each team is allowed four non-Israelis to play on the team. And it's like these guys, for the most part, are not your A-level stars, but they're quality college players. You know, we're talking about college right now in the March Madness tournament. But, you know, these are college players that couldn't for one reason or another, make it to the league, and they're out there just trying to make a living. And then, you know, a lot of players make good living overseas. And especially, you know, you talk about female players. You know, the girls in the WNBA, a lot of them still play overseas. And it's like, you are cutting off your nose to spite your face if you're like, no, only Israelis should play on an Israeli basketball team.
Yeah, absolutely. In the NBA, it's not a very wide margin, but in the NBA in America, that's still the best place in the world for basketball. And if there are people on benches, there are people in the D leagues who I do believe could play and excel in overseas European leagues. And so for me to come out and say something like that really shows me that he's not, he obviously isn't concerned with any type of talent level of people in the NBA. It's just pure, unadulterated racism.
And the thing is, look, I guess Halon is right outside of Tel Aviv, and their club in Halon is Hapoel. I don't know how you pronounce it, but that's the name of their club. And they won the championship in 07-08. But they're in seventh place right now. So it's like, Mr. Mayor, you might want a few more niggas on your team. Yeah, boost you out of the basement. it's just ridiculous. I mean, the mayor has come out and apologized and given one of those non-apology apologies. And he's like, the choice of the word niggas was inappropriate, and I apologize. I, of course, meant foreign players. ... in parentheses, who happen to be black niggas.
Niggas.
Like, this is just a stupid xenophobic statement to make, and it's like, come on, man. Like, this, it looks bad upon your league, upon your city. Like, this is probably the first time a lot of people have even thought about the Israeli Basketball League in a while, right, if ever, and this is your first exposure to it. So, you know, if I'm a college player that wants to play overseas, you know, and I was thinking about going to play in Israel, I might be like, you know what? I'm going to take it to China, or I might take it to Russia or somewhere over there. And sooner or later, you know, if you end up with a league full of just Israeli players, I'm sure there's a lot of great players over there. But a lot of these teams, their core players are guys that, you know, were stars in college and couldn't make it to the NBA. So it's like, you take those guys off of the team, and this is what you're left with, Mr. Mayor. So, you know, enjoy that product. Enjoy being in seventh place because the niggas is playing in China.
Now, that's got to be on a T-shirt. On the back, it should say the niggas is playing in China.
What is just a picture of Stephon Marbury eating some General Cho's chicken? The niggas is playing in China.
That wouldn't be racist at all.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X. Attack like I just left.